This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
Welcome to The Changing Face of Fairview, where we talk to Kieran Hanrahan and Jim McAllister about Cossack, to Maurice Mullen about Kiltorri Clontarf, to Tommy Condren, who provides us with recollections of his youth in Merino, to Nisha Reynolds and Joe Don, who talk about the environment. But first, we talk to Father Anthony, who describes the Kerala Green Plan and how it could be applied to Fairview.
Yes, of course. I remember back in 1983, 1985 and 86, we had a big drought in Kerala. And after, we were trying to see what we can do. And I think the government with the forest industry tried to do something.
Yeah.
The tree plants were given to each single family. And I remember in 1987, after the drought in May and June, when we had the rainfall, actually the monsoon, we started planting the trees every single house. Yeah. And not only that, they gave us money too for the sustenance of the plants on an yearly basis for 2 years.
Yeah.
So that was one of the models that Kerala government with the forest industry did for the people in Kerala. And then we have also a project called Haritha Kerala, that is in Malayalam. In English, it is called Greening Kerala.
Greening.
And every year, 7 million trees are planted in Kerala, which can be taken into Ireland.
Yeah.
This is done through very simple methods, like in the churches, in the schools, in the colleges, in the social institutions.
Mm.
And the children, boys and girls from the schools take it up.
Yeah.
Institutions take it up. And where do they plant them? That's, in the public lands, on the roadsides, river banks, and private lands where there are places. So I think Fairview can adopt that model and plant more trees. For example, in Fairview Park, there's still places there where we can plant trees and the roadways, roadsides. But I'm so sad to see all these cement works around the road. There is no land seen. There is no earth seen. It's all cemented, which is really, really sad to see.
Yeah.
I think we could plant more trees. I mean, this Kerala model could be taken up for the area of Fairview.
Yeah. And many thanks to Father Anthony. Next, Nisha Reynolds of Forest Friends talked about the work he does for that organisation, collecting seeds, growing them into trees to eventually plant them out in the community.
I'm lucky enough because I actually love the autumn. And of course, it's in the autumn that you get the seed coming from the native trees that are in our landscape. So what I do is collect as many seed as I possibly can to bring them on to a small tree, and hopefully eventually when we actually have found places where we can plant them, to plant them in the communities where, of course, once the forest was standing.
So then last year you collected at least a thousand little acorns, and they're growing in the back of Forest Friends 55 Fairview Strand, and people are welcome to come along and have a look at these trees growing on young trees.
If you can bring on very small little trees, you have a chance to bring them to people, to local communities, and have them actually connect with the tree by planting it themselves and then watching it grow.
Also from Forest Friends, Joseph Dunn talks about the importance of environmental education for all, young and old.
The only thing we can do is educate the people, educate the listeners, tell them what's going on, give them a point of view which is enlightening for them and which is highlighting the situations as they are and the way that the different planning issues affect the their environment and the devastating effect that the destruction of their environment will have on them.
Okay, Forest Friends then is reaching out as part of this effort with Near FM, is reaching out to all the different groups in Fairview. Tell us about how these new partnerships within the community, how we can create new partnerships as a result of these programs.
Well, I think that the real success from this contact comes from the actual contact itself, in that you're giving the people a sense of the history of the area, where the area came from, and the groups in the area.
Here we go round the mulberry bush, the mulberry bush, the mulberry bush. Here we go round the mulberry bush on a cold and frosty morning. This is the way we do our tree walk, do our tree walk, do our tree walk. This is the way we do our tree walk on a cold and frosty morning.
That song was sung by the participants in a tree walk organised by Forest Friends. And at the same event, we had a poem recited by Mary, a member of the group.
I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree that looks at God all day and lifts its leafy arms to pray, a tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair.
Poems are made by fools like me,
but only God can make a tree.
To capture the essence of the Fairview Park experience on a Sunday morning, we spoke to a whole range of different users of the park.
Well, Ireland, first of all, it's good. It's good that the people here, they welcome us everywhere we go. Even they don't try to be racism. There's no racism at all for us. We are everywhere. We play in Fairview. We play soccer everywhere. We go to swimming pool. We do all activities, you know. So all the people here, especially in northeast of Dublin, they like us here.
I probably like the Fairview Park, and I like the shops, Centra. And we're near everything really here. You can walk into town, you can bus. That's, you know, it's terrific really, Fairview. Better than anywhere, I think.
You wouldn't have a bad word to say about it?
Not really, no. I don't think there's anything bad about Fairview. Yeah. At all, really. Banks, everything is near you.
When I was younger, we used to go to the blind up the road.
I think a lot of them go into town now.
There's no one here to patrol the park with the cutbacks.
Yeah. It's because of the cutbacks, you think?
Well, it started here about 5 years ago with the flowers.
Yeah.
10 years ago, you'd see rows of flowers and nobody go near them.
Yeah.
But unfortunately now, people just walk across them. No respect.
Yes, we've been at this for the last 48 years.
Yeah.
Continuously of Sunday morning, so I suppose at this stage we're no longer 21, are we?
Yeah, exactly. So you don't resent being called the golden oldies?
Not in the least. I think it's a marvellous thing that you can get out here at this stage of our lives and kick football. It's absolutely marvellous.
It was a great place to be. Then I went through a period where it wasn't safe. There was drugs, and it took a good while. The guards were over, I think, every day just trying to eradicate them, and eventually they did.
Yeah.
It's getting better now. You have a lot of non-nationals coming over playing football, as we see today.
Yeah.
You have a lot of Indian people or Pakistani people come over playing cricket, which is great.
Yeah.
Chinese people come over, play football. It's a good place to be. There's still an element there where the park can be very dirty, and people are just, they couldn't keep their houses like this, and eventually the park rangers have to come in, clean it up every day. But other than that, it's great.
Most people that are in this park today, majority of them are from Ghana, Cameroon, Congo, Angola, Nigeria, and Eastern Europe, and South Africa. And I wouldn't know specifically myself the reason why they picked Fairview, but to me and to others, it's a nice, peaceful and open park for everybody. So we come here to play football and enjoy the day.
Cossack is a new state-of-the-art facility to promote traditional Irish music and song, built by Ciotas Cultori Cluntarach and now operated by Ciotas Cultori Éireann. It is located along the Alfie Byrne Road, adjoining Fairview Park. Kieran Hanrahan and Jim McAllister describe the facilities which the centre provides.
Well, the centre is important from the point of view of cultural development, I think. That's where it's going to play its main role in this area. You've seen around the facility. You know, you have rehearsal rooms, you have a recording facility here, which is now an excellent recording studio up in the corner, beautiful theatre. And from the point of view of a locality, it's very important to have a centre for people. It's open to everybody in the locality. They can come down and learn a bit about culture, or they can come down and hire a place, or come and see a show, whatever kind of tickles their fancy with regard to traditional music, song and dance.
And so you see it then as a community-based centre, just the same as you'd have someone over in, say, Clare or something like that. You're originally from Clare yourself, isn't it?
I'm indeed. I'm from Ennis in County Clare. Yeah. I do see it as that because it's a fantastic resource and it should be used by the people of the locality. Yeah. It's you know, it doesn't matter what area of the arts or culture people are pursuing, we'd have a facility here for them. And I was delighted to be asked to come out here and do a bit of work with Jim on the centre by way of promoting it. And we will have a programme of events which we will be publicising over the next couple of months here. And we're sure that we'll have something for just about everybody.
Well, we've a capacity for up to 340. If someone comes along and they've got an event that they know the capacity, or they've only sold tickets for 200 or 220, that's what we set it up for, because there's nothing worse than playing to 200 empty seats.
How much would it cost for an evening?
Because we are community-based and we are just that, and we have a price structure that we look and say to people, if it's their first year and they're coming into us, we want them to be a success. We want them to come back to us, not just next year, but we want them to be coming back to us for the next 15 years. And if someone is starting off and they know that their ticket price is going to be €10 and they know that the best they're going to do is 150 people, and we can do the maths as well as anybody else, you know, if they're only going to take 1,500 or €1,800 on the door, if they've got expenses that already run to 1,000 or €1,200, there's no point in me saying, well, I need €1,000 per night, because that's going to put them out of business, and they might do it once and that's it. They're not going to come back. So we talk to every group. We have a commercial rate, and that commercial rate is designed for people who are making money at the game, for promoters and people like that. We don't encourage rock bands and things like that. That's not who we are. But certainly in the folk and the trad music genre, for commercial people, the theatre per night is €700 plus the expenses that are incurred, because each one is different. For a community group, it's a lot less than that. And we talk to people, we find out what their own expectation on a return is, and we gauge a price according to that.
Kioltóirí Clún Tarv promote traditional Irish music and song in the Merino College opposite Fairview Park. We talked to Maurice Mullins, who is the leader of that organisation.
Our contribution is that we're a key part of the education infrastructure in the Fairview area, and we're very well known there, and we're very well known particularly in relation to traditional music circles. We're regarded as a result, highly regarded from the substantial numbers of high quality players that have emanated from our stable, so to speak. Kioltóirí Clún Tarv is one of the biggest organisations in Dublin, indeed in the country, for teaching traditional music. And we've been operating as an organisation for nearly 50 years, and particularly in the Merino Fairview area, we've been operating for over 30 years. We teach traditional music to children in particular, but also to adults and young people, to teenagers and so forth. We teach all instruments, and we also train bands and groups for public performances and for participation in festivals both in Ireland and abroad, and for competitions.
Can you explain then why young people, you know, young people are turning away from a lot of things in Irish culture? Why is it that in terms of music and song, traditional stuff, that why is it they're not turning away from that?
Well, I think music and song is part of it's while it's part of the heritage on the one hand, as a social form of music and way of interacting with people as an art form, it's one that people find very enjoyable. I think that young people in particular find it something that they've taken great ownership of this form of music. It's fair to say in Dublin now there are far, far, far more young players playing than there ever were of the older generations. Yeah. And they've literally stepped into the shoes of the ownership of this yeah. art form and are now leading lights.
Yeah.
We train bands and groups not only to help to develop the students' music, but also from the developing the social and the performance elements of music. And this is a critical part of the services we're offering. Mm-hmm. So this is something that people find very attractive. Part of this, for example, we would bring groups to the type of festivals like the Drum Shambor, the Willie Clancy Week, and to the All-Ireland FLA. Yeah. And again, it's part of both enjoying the art form as well as enjoying the fun that goes with it. And again, this links into the attractiveness for young people at this stage.
Eileen Kinnan and Tommy Condren describe their early recollections of traditions and events.
The processions were beautiful.
Yeah.
And they used to carry the statue of Our Lady around to the little wooden church.
Yeah.
And the bands, they were great, absolutely fantastic, lovely, and the children after making their first communion and everything, their clothes were lovely, the whites on the girls and the little dark suits on the boys. I used to cycle into work, and Mr. O'Connor was our bread man that lived at the corner, and he was going into Boland's and I'd go along with them.
Yeah.
And he'd always say to me, mind the tracks, Eileen, mind the tracks.
The
tracks for the trams were on the on the ground. And if your wheel caught in the tracks, you were knocked. They were very dangerous. Right? And the Easter ceremonies were beautiful. The summer was coming in, and we'd down past our house, there was two D's, the D walls, we called them.
Yeah.
And my mother would go to McBurney's, and she'd at O'Connor Bridge, and get us sandals and runners.
Yeah.
So as we could run and play all summer.
Yeah.
In the sandals and runners.
Yeah.
They were lovely.
Right. Yeah. So then you had the pantomime at Christmas
and
as well.
Three masses. We got three masses on Christmas morning. Seamus, of course, he loved going around the house with myself and Gerard and Paddy.
Yeah.
And we pretend that we were singing for... The carol singing.
Yeah.
And we'd go from room to room, room to room.
Yeah.
And my father would have the punch ready for my mother when she'd come in.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you had a pantomime at Christmas as well.
We had, we used to go to the Father Matthew Hall. It was great.
That's great.
All the pantomimes.
Yeah.
And we'd have to walk.
From
Fairview
to Church Street.
From Fairview to Church Street to the Father Matcha Hall all the way.
Yeah.
And we'd be delighted. The whole lot of us.
You'd visit the crib as well, would you?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mind you, we never went to see the moving crib.
No.
There was a moving crib.
Yeah.
Up past the rotunda.
Okay.
So and we never got to see that, but where we did get to see the Christmas, real Christmas, beautiful, was in St. Vincent's Hospital on the Green.
Oh,
We had a relation, Sister Mary Mel Hickey.
Yeah.
And she would take us around the wards.
Yeah.
Now, the wards that time, there'd be maybe 10 in the wards or 16.
Mm.
And all the stuff was in the centre.
Yeah.
The bowls and the jugs with the 5 o'clock wash or 6. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Okay.
Beautiful.
At that time, boys go around with little broken down prams and sell bundles of sticks for a penny. One of the nights, well, his boy came along selling sticks, and my father thought he had no shoes. He gave him a pair of shoes belonging to one of us, and the boy was delighted. The next week he came again, but this time he had no shoes again. And my father asked him what happened to shoes, and he said his mother sold the shoes. In Marino at the D Walls, there are four backers, as we call it. These are four fields behind groups of houses. And we would dig something like a big grave, and we'd have clay steps down to it. And we would cover them over with brass beds, old brass beds that were disregarded, expensive nowadays. And we put corrugated sheet over that, and then clay over that again. And we would go down these shelters and have a candle and tell ghost stories to each other. Yeah. We'd play cowboys and Indians in these fields as well. We would also use our imagination and having games. And we would kick the can, relievio, and pussy four corners. These were the games we played.
Well, tell us a little bit more about these games, because a lot of people wouldn't know what relievio was and kick the can. And tell us a little bit more about these games, what they were.
Yeah, kick the can was, there'd be a can there, and one person would have the can, and he'd put it down, we'd all run and hide. And then while the can would be there, and he'd be looking to find where the people were, where they were hidden. And while he was looking, someone would again run out and kicked again the can away further from him again. And again, he'd come back then and looking for the people. Each time he went to one area, someone from the other area would run out and kick the can.
Somewhere else, yeah. You know. So it was kind of hide and seek.
Hide and seek, yeah, but okay. The can was going further.
Yeah, so tell us about relievio, and then you mentioned another game then as well.
The relievio was you cop people in a rope, and then one would disappear. And when the guardian of the rope would look for someone else. Someone else would go in and open the rope and relieve the people that were in prison.
Yeah. And you mentioned one other game there, I think, as well, did you?
The kick the can, pussy four corners.
Pussy four corners, what was that?
Yeah, pussy four corners would be four corners, and a person would be on each corner. Yeah. And there'd be one in the middle. And we had to run over and exchange corners.
Yeah.
But the person in the middle might get to the corner before the other person. So the loser would then stand in the middle.
So they were games that you played.
This was the time before television. And we all had to use our imagination for entertainment. So,
yeah. Austin Fox, a local resident, talks about how the area has changed.
Well, the new buildings and that have emerged from it.
Yeah.
And the cinema has gone, of course, Fairview Cinema. Replaced by a supermarket.
Yeah. Tell me about the shops then. Could you list some shops that you like to go into to buy this, that or the other? Could you list some of the shops that are gone?
Gorgon's next door.
Yeah.
Sweet shop, news agent.
Yeah. Griffin. That's Larry Gogan. That was Larry Gogan, the famous DJ.
Yeah, that was him. And Griffin's, the news agents, on the main road.
Yeah.
Centre's set up over here now. There was just a carriage there at the time. Yeah. Other than that, it's much the same.
Yeah. Now, where did you find your entertainment? Like, did you find your entertainment in the parish hall, or did you go into town, or was it out at the airport? Where did you go for your leisure activities, or what
cinema
did you do?
Cinema.
Yeah. So what kind of films then were you watching, say, in the 60s?
Westerns.
Did you watch ones where the cavalry would come, the Indians, the Native American Indians would be attacking a home, and the cavalry would come in and sort them out, and there'd be a big fight, and everybody would cheer? What would they cheer for?
For the cavalry coming along.
Niall Ring continues his account of the personnel and events associated with the Easter Rising and the role which Fairview played.
Yeah, all around the area. I mean, think of the names in subsequent governments
which names like Oscar Traynor, who we knew. Oscar Traynor was in Frank Henderson's. He was also a captain in F Company.
He was from, local as well, was he?
He was from Bayview Avenue.
Bayview Avenue.
You had Harry Colley, as we said, from Clonliffe Road.
Yeah.
We had Michael O'Hanrahan, who was executed. He was from Fairview as well.
Yeah.
You had John McQuaid, East Road and East Wall.
Yeah. So why is it then that, if you like, this history, this important history, has been airbrushed out? Like, is it... I know that a lot of the fighting took place in the inner city, in the forecourts around Moore Street and Boland's, Big Galligan. So that's where the photographs are there of the you know, bombed buildings and all that kind of, where all the action took place. So all the preparation then was in Fairview, and a lot of the personnel then were Fairview, the Fairview kind of inner city, Ballybock area. So why is it, has it not been properly documented? You mentioned a book there. This is that little book you have. And then also there's Mud Island. So there's a few books. You might just mention those books so that people can actually read them, you know, and find out more of the history.
Well, one of the books, which is Frank Henderson's Easter Rising, which is Recollections of a Dublin Volunteer.
Yeah.
And that's still in print and is available on, just go onto the internet. And that's, Frank gives a 70-page, it's from the Bureau of Military History, his yeah. Statement.
Is that available in Easons and that kind of stuff?
Well, I got it on the internet. Haven't seen it.
So it's Frank Henderson, Easter Rising. And then one is Mud Island.
Mud Island, which is the history of Ballybock, which covers a much, obviously, a much longer period of time.
Yeah.
Frank Henderson would have, he wrote his original memoirs in Irish, and his son, who was a priest, translated it, and it's an excellent read and very detailed.
So okay, so there's other places that crop up then. Mars Pub, for example, which is still there in Fairview. Mars Pub, there was a bit of a conflab there, was there?
Well, Mars Pub, which at the time was called Lamb's Pub, Public Lambs, House. Yeah. Obviously there was the confusion on Easter Sunday when McNeill put the advertisement in the Sunday Independent that the manoeuvres in inverted commas had been cancelled.
Yeah.
Because earlier that week, Tomás McDonagh had addressed each company of the 2nd Battalion in Fairview and addressed the commanders and the men and basically told them to prepare for that something was going to happen. And everyone read between the lines and realised that this was the strike for freedom.
Yeah.
And but unfortunately, on the Sunday, Easter Sunday, the manoeuvres were called off, and this caused a lot of confusion because men had mobilised down to Father Matthew Park. Extra guards were put on the park all that week.
Yeah.
Because there was a pavilion there which had a lot of arms. The ICA, the Citizens Army, were also on alert, so everyone was ready for the rising.
I would like to thank all those who participated in this programme and in the series The Changing Face of Fairview, and a special thanks to the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland for their sponsorship of the series.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.